Morning. Nice to see you all today. Steam rising off the lake. Changing. The lake seems to like to freeze during Rohatsu Sesshin, which is a week-long retreat we have coming up soon. We often can stand here and day after day watch as things become more still here, the lake become more and more still. But it's always very dynamic. Last year during Rohatsu, I came out one day in the afternoon during a break, and there was snow swirling like a dust devil on the lake, and there was a bald eagle playing in the currents for about 15 minutes. No idea what it was doing. It doesn't look like it was any prey. It was just diving down to the surface of the lake and coming back up about 20 feet. I didn't have anything else to do but hang out with the eagle. It was pretty good. So I'd like to begin today by chanting together the song of the grass for hermitage. So hopefully as many of you as possible can share some chant books. We may not have enough for everyone, so I'm sorry. You can listen. There are a couple seats in here too, if there are none back there. Come on in. And so if you can just find the tab for the this chant, it says midday, Sesshin midday or midday Sesshin, Sesshin. And you'll see, yeah, the Song of the Grass for Hermitage there. And I know many of you may be quite unfamiliar with the Zen style of chanting. It's not very complicated. And it's just a way to use our voices together to create some beauty together, to bring speech and words which are about peace, harmony, and kindness onto our lips together. But before we start chanting, I'd like to just help us prepare. So I encourage everyone to find a very upright posture, kind of posture we might use for meditation practice, one that is energetic but relaxed. Oh, it has about 0% to do with looking good, 100% to do with bringing our energy to this moment in a noble and relaxed, dignified expression. And all chanting can arise from a deep sense of the breath. So I encourage you to find some deep breath in the belly to support the sound, to uphold the Dharma. And to bring awareness to hearing so that our engagement may be reciprocal and relational, expressing in a way that is harmonious with everyone we are with. And as we prepare to chant, I'd like to also say briefly that, as some of you may know, the very beloved and inspiring teacher Thich Nhat Hanh is very ill. His closest companion on the path, Sister Chan Kong, has put out the word that he may be approaching the end of his life. And many people here have been touched by the man known as Tay's life. So as we chant, I invite you to join me in offering the merit or benefit of our practice of chanting, both to his life and his own corporal form, but also to the bodhisattva vow that he embodies, and the possibility that we may live a life of peace, a life of engagement, of compassion, and joy. And let's chant together. Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 feet squared, an old man illumines forms in their nature. A great vehicle, bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers, be familiar with their instruction, bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from the skin bag here and now.
Well, I usually chant before sitting, so I kind of feel like just ringing a bell and we could just sit here for 45 minutes, but I guess it's supposed to be talking time.
So, you know, I've been talking about this poem quite a bit lately. As some of you know, I wrote a book about the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, which was published a few months ago. And so, you know, I was preparing for this talk, and I thought, maybe I should talk about something else. And I thought, well, I'll give one more talk about Song of the Grassroots Hermitage. And, you know, I've been traveling around the country talking about it, and I'll be finishing up doing those travels this week. And it's been a wonderful opportunity to meet a lot of really great people. There are a lot of great people in this room. And I don't know if there are people who are any greater than anyone else, but they're quite wonderful, I know, because I get to hang out with them. But I've been able to travel around and meet a lot of other really wonderful people who are just committed to putting some effort into finding a world that has more peace and more compassion in it, and finding that world through themselves. And that's been really inspiring, really inspiring. So anyway, I thought, well, I'll just give this one more talk at MZMC, and then I'll give the four talks I'm doing next week out in California, and then I'm moving on. And then I saw that there's a retreat I'm leading in January, and I thought, well, you know, really, if you want to engage with this kind of teaching, the ratio of teaching to meditation practice really should be like the ratio in a retreat. But we chant this thing a couple times, someone talks for a half an hour, and then we sit and we do the practice for a day. That's a good ratio. This isn't about words. This is about your own direct engagement with the moment, my own direct engagement with the moment. The words really are just to kind of fool us into sitting down. Somehow, if we come together and talk about it, it makes it a little easier to sit and do meditation practice. Maybe it makes it a little easier to sit with someone and be nice to them, which is good to do. So anyway, I'm hoping I don't turn into what some of you may know as Gute, the Zen teacher who always only raised one finger when anyone asked him a question. So I'm just going to talk about a few lines from this poem today. And I'm not entirely sure how many that will be. But let's start with this idea, this pairing of lines. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Who is this? So, I think that in this book I wrote about this, I talk quite a bit about this. There's a theme in Chinese Buddhism called the host and the guest, and there are all these permutations of it. Lin Ji's fourfold host and guest, Dongshan's five ranks of the absolute and relative. Sounds fun, but I'm not really going to talk about that today. Maybe I will allude to it, but I'm going to kind of dodge that here. Come on in. There's a seat right here. So, you know, who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? You know, in this poem, The Song of the Grassroots Hermitage, the character that's translated as Hermitage in the title, Song of the Grassroots Hermitage, and as I built a grass hut in the first line, is the same character, and it actually means basically place of Buddhist practice, or maybe place of spiritual practice. So you can use the same character, you would use it to describe like a gigantic temple
So, like, if you went to, like, a huge temple in Beijing, it would be the same, like, character describing it as this little hut that Shitu has made. So he could say, I built a grass monastery. But it shows something about just how proud Shitu is. He's like, I've got a monastery. It's like a little 10 by 10 shack. That's going to do the trick. It'll do the trick. I don't need much. He doesn't say, I don't need much because I'm better than you. He says, I don't need much because life is really peaceful and joyful if you just let go. But it's quite humble. His offering is very humble. So, who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? So another way to think about this line is that we appear to spend a lot of time arranging seats to try and entice guests. That is to say, arranging things to get what we want. Well, maybe some of you never try and arrange things to get what you want. But I have a feeling that, like me, many of you do. We think, oh, you know, if I just say the right thing to this person, I've been talking to my child for 10 years about how they never do the dishes. And if I just finally arrange the seats the right way, I'll manipulate them effectively and they'll do it the way I want it to. I know none of you would ever engage in anything like this. Or maybe think, oh, I'm going to do my job really well and I'm going to get a promotion and I'm going to get more money. And then I'm going to buy a new car and everything's going to be awesome. Arranging seats to entice guests. Arranging seats to entice guests. And even just when we're sitting in Zazen, it seems like I watch the mind just saying, you know, maybe if I'll just sit up a little taller, that's going to be the ticket. No, maybe I'll sit down a little lower. I think that's going to be that's the guest that I really want. No, that wasn't it. And back and forth. Ooh, you know, if only the building didn't whistle in the wind, then, you know, we need a new building. No whistling. Or whatever it is. The light should be brighter or darker. Or it should be colder or warmer. Hey, try and arrange things so there's no cold weather. Can you do it? Can you do it? There's a movie called State and Main. And in this movie, some filmmakers who are all incredibly self-absorbed and completely fixated on making their movie show up in a small town. And they show up and the people of the town are really excited because there's these Hollywood people in their small town. And the mayor's wife gets very excited and she says, we got to have these people over for dinner. We're the main people of the town. And she gets really excited. And her husband is the mayor. He says, yes, that sounds good. And she gets really excited. And we watch these brief scenes throughout the movie where suddenly you realize she is remodeling her house. She is buying new china. She has hired cooks to come in. And so she's really excited, arranging everything unbelievably beautifully and elaborately. And the movie people are completely fixated on a movie, and they're kind of like, oh, yes, we have to appease these people. We'll show up. It'll be fine. But they're very fixated, and they're very frantic. So at one point, they accidentally, someone rubs off the date of the dinner with the mayor's wife on the whiteboard and puts it on the wrong day. So then we see the mayor's wife and the mayor wearing comically elaborately arranged clothing in their comically elaborately arranged house for the film people to come, and they don't come. And we watch through the night as they become, first they're in denial, let's just pretend this isn't happening, and then
slowly they become dejected and then enraged. Enraged. And then they hate. And they hate those film people.
Actually, it's the mayor's wife who really hates them. And the mayor thinks, well, I'm going to have to hate them too. And then he uses his power to harm them. And it's all very satirical. But it's all very real. Because we spend so much time trying to arrange things so we can get what we want. And it's, how often is it frustrating? So the question Shitu asks is, who would do that? Who would do that? Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Who is it who would turn the amazing, wondrous, constantly unknowable moment into this relentless, I better get everything right so it can be okay, get what I want? Who would do that? Who would do that? And on the one hand, you know, maybe he's employing a little, you know, sarcasm. Like, come on, man. Who would do that? You don't have to do that. That's, you can just crack out of it. But on the other hand, he may also be saying, who would do that? Who is this? Who's doing it? Do you think you know? Do you know who it is who moment to moment turns what you're experiencing into trying to get what you want out of it? Do you really know? Who is this I? Where does it come from? I do not know. I'm not asking you like, I'm asking you a trick question. Come back next week and give me the correct answer. I don't know. Who is it? This is a very common Zen koan practice. Just go through your day asking, who is this? Who is this person? Kind of think we know, oh yes, I'm the person who doesn't like this and does like that, and I'm trying to get this. But where did all that come from? Who is here right now? What does I even mean? If you begin to see, as many of us do, that all the things that you think just seem to arise, like if you practice Zazen, you'll see I didn't make the thought, and the thought isn't me. I didn't make the body, and I'm not really in charge of it. Otherwise, I'd say, stop being in so much pain. Stop aging. Okay, didn't work. I'll try again. Can't do it. You want to be in control of your feelings? You're fooling yourself. You can't. You can stuff them, but they'll come back. Please don't do that. Open up to who you are. Who is this? Who is this person? This is an opportunity. So this, who is this? Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? This is a koan. Koan means a lot of things, but here I'll just say it means a question that really challenges the most basic ideas you have about how things are. There's an I, and I know what it is, and it's got to figure things out so I can be okay. Is that fundamentally true? I don't know. Investigate. And, of course, in some Zen practice, you know, mostly related to the Rinzai school, you know, you might take up this question and it's just like, make your life this question.
then come see the teacher and tell them what you think about the question and have them tell you you're wrong. It's fun. I've never done this kind of practice, and I've heard it's really quite wonderful. Powerfully transformative. But we don't really do that here. But we do encourage deep questioning. Deep questioning. And she too here at the cusp of where koan practice will separate and we'll get a school of koan practice and silent illumination practice. He has them right next to each other. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. Turn around the light to shine within. Don't investigate this by just, you know, one koan teacher said something about, like, if you're going to work with a koan, you've got to turn up the heat. You can't cook rice without heat. We use very little heat for our rice cooking around here. We use a little bit. A little bit. Mostly we just come in. Actually, if you turn that heat down low, that rice will cook. And we don't have to do that much. Just come in and sit down. Turn around the light to shine within. Just return. We investigate the koan just by not looking for something else. The question of who this is opens up naturally if we let go of our preconceptions, the ideas we already have. That naturally will happen. We don't have to make it happen. Because the problem is, if we get really good at our, who is this? Well, we're arranging seats to get a guest. Ooh, I'm going to have a big breakthrough. I'm going to find out who this is, the original face. Wow. I'm going to know my parents before they were born. Yeah. Going to be an awesome guest. The greatest guest. Total realization. This can get sort of problematic. So it's good to just turn around the light to shine within, then just return. Just come back here and quiet down. Here is a good place to do it, like this building, but actually here is always, there's not some other here. So you can always come back here. Whatever the here is, just return. Silent illumination is one kind of name or way of describing the kind of practice that has evolved into the practice that we do here of meditation. I don't know if the koan was termed by Hongzhi, but he held it up. He put it really nicely once. Just wander into the center of the circle of wonder. Wander into the center of the circle of wonder. You don't have to, who is this? Well, you can do that too. If that arises, that's cool. That's your wondering. But we don't need to cultivate that. We just kind of roam in here and go, oh, what is this? Huh. Not by forcing some deep question, but just opening up. Having a moment where we just taste the breath. And where our mind is not busy trying to arrange seats. And then not saying, ooh, oh, I got a breath. Good job. Maybe I'll get two. Just another guest. Guests come and go. Guaranteed. And we're usually pretty grateful. I'll read you a poem by a 17th century Chinese nun named Chaoyan. It's called A Self-Description.
Above the highest peak of Mount Wu, the round moon is alone. Cold and bland, pure and poor. It does not possess a single thing. If someone should come along and ask what this nun is doing, she sits for long hours on her meditation mat, enjoying herself. Above the highest peak of Mount Wu, the round moon is alone. Cold and bland, pure and poor, it does not possess a single thing. If someone should come along and ask what this nun is doing, she sits for long hours on her meditation mat, enjoying herself. So like she too, she finds joy in simplicity. She's not looking for something else. The moon is alone. She finds some joy in repose. Dogen Zenji says, the zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is the Dharma gate of joyful ease and repose. That is to say, it is the practice of joyful ease and repose. Now, some of you may be thinking, not my zazen. So sometimes zazen may not be joyful ease and repose. Sometimes it may be, I'm having a whole argument in my mind and I don't even need anyone else. Spectacular. Well, that is so. That is so. We get to see the self doing what the self does. And as that happens, we may let go of some ideas about what the self is. And we may find that we do not know what this is. We may say, like Shih Tzu, who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? So she describes her practice, not trying to get something, not trying to attain something, not trying to host anyone, not looking for a guest that is other. I think it is nice to talk about the aspect of this line, turn around the light to shine within, then just return, that points towards turning around the light to look at the things that we would normally think of as ourselves. Instead of, I guess, the theme here, instead of trying to fix things out there so we can get what we want, and then we'll be okay. Hey, if I just get my husband to do what I want, everything will be great. Or, if I get my boss. But, this turning around the light to shine within, it's very good to see not only that thoughts are arising, and to see that there are sensations in the body, but it's really good to see what the what we feel. What is the emotion that's here? This is really good. Because then we can actually be close to ourselves, and we have the possibility to, rather than just trying to control someone or some other thing to fix whatever we don't like in here, we can actually just take care of ourselves here, and we can just return with some openness. With some openness. And this is something that Thich Nhat Hanh certainly really thoroughly emphasized in his teaching. A person who, during the Vietnam War, he spent a lot of time organizing people to, in both what became North and South Vietnam, to build clinics and schools and find shelters for people. But he also just said one of the most important things to do is just sit on the ground and know how you are. Just sit on the ground and know how you are. Take care of the pain of this warfare. And Martin Luther King Jr., who nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize during the Vietnam conflict, one of the processes that was used, that he would use with groups of people when they were going to do an action, was, they call it purification. Well, I don't know much about purity. Well, what they did is they just sat down before they would go in and engage in direct action and just take care of whatever hatred and anger was there as hatred and anger, so they wouldn't show up and take it out on someone else. And if you think you've got things to be hateful and angry about, imagine the condition of Martin Luther King Jr. and the people he was working with. Imagine the condition of the people in Vietnam, millions of whom died in that conflict. And that a person could just stand up and say, best thing to do right now is take care of how you feel and not dump that on someone else and step up into compassionate action. You can do it. You can do it. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. You want to go out here and arrange seats to try and get it? Well, who would do that? Turn around the light. But the vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. No matter which way you turn, you can't grab it. And you can't get rid of it. What is this? What does everything come from? We don't know. It's beyond us. There is something vast beyond knowing. Always here. Always informing everything that's happening. We can't avoid it. Can't hold it. We can't own it. Can't be the one, I know it and I'll tell everyone else about it. We won't get there. But it's dynamic. And it's still. It's radiant. I'll read another poem here by Chow Yun to end this talk. And this is a little bit oblique, but in this poem, time evaporates, change both happens and doesn't happen. And the constant is the practice. On this mat, I've sat silently in solitary meditation retreat. 4 years come and gone. My old countenance has changed. In a snap of the fingers, I've seen through the mind's games. The blue mountains stand, as before, among the white clouds. On this mat, I've silently sat in solitary meditation retreat, 4 years come and gone. My old countenance has changed. In a snap of the fingers, I've seen through the mind's games. And the blue mountains stand, as before, among the white clouds. I thank you for your practice, listening practice, and I will invite any questions. questions or observations that anyone has? Go ahead.
So I was thinking about the question, and another one kind of just kept coming into my head. Who would carefully arrange seats so that the guests, if any of them got up in the middle of the night to get a drink of water, wouldn't stumble over in the dark?
Very nice. Hi, Eric.
Thanks for doing that dirty work.
Please, I'll invite everyone, if you're talking, to speak up, just because we have two rooms, too.
Yeah, thanks for talking about the line about inviting guests, because that's the line I always forget. For some reason, that line seems really out of place to me in that. And so whenever I think about this poem, it's my brain just glosses over that part. Because that process is so universal of, you know, I want this one thing and now I have it, but nope, that wasn't it, so I want this next thing. And that, I think that happens to everyone, and it happens so often. And I think in Zazen we come to this state where, and this is the really scary part, where I realize that I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want. Like, my entire life, I get up out of bed because I know what I want. That's the entire thing I go on. And as a lot of Martin's talks during the practice period have been about, like, how you will cling on to that, we'll die for that, because that's the only map there is. And what kind of my conscious mind doesn't want to tell me is that not knowing what I want is the state of desirelessness. That's the same thing. And so we come into, you know, you even just brush by Buddhism, you get we suffer because we desire. And so, then I'll just not desire. And then when we get to that, it's like super scary. The state of not desiring was supposed to be me beating the game. It's not. And so, That's one reason why I keep coming back.
Yeah. That's very good. And it does, as we dissolve the really deep preconceptions that we have, it can be quite scary and disturbing. That's one example. But so it's good to have some people to spend time with who can help you.
I'm going to say this is vast forces beyond us.
What's it been?
Yes. It's beyond us and within us. Or what George Harrison said, within you and without you. I saw another hand.
What is the book really about?
Oh, I like that question. This is a great book. Daughters of Emptiness is a collection of translations of poems by Chinese nuns by Beata Grant, who is just great. It's a beautiful book. I highly encourage spending time with it. Well, I think this is a good time to wrap up this part and turn it over to our Doan. So thank you all very much.